I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, a midday newsmaker interview with Dr. Sonia Santalises, the president and CEO of the Baltimore City Public Schools. School has been back in session for 2 months. For many more months than that, the Kerwin Commission has debated ways to revamp the funding formula for schools statewide. Their findings were to have been released by the end of the year. Now, it appears that we won't hear their ideas until well into next year. We'll find out what that means for our city's kids. Plus, the internationally acclaimed classical guitarist Manuel Barueco joins me with his guitar for a preview of a concert that he's giving tomorrow night. The chief of city schools and an icon in the world of music, Sonia Santalises and Manuel Barueco join me live in Studio A when Midday starts right after the news. And welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us today. A conversation with Dr. Sonia Santalises, the CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. On Wednesday, the Kerwin Commission announced that the plan that they intend to present to reform Maryland schools will be delayed until perhaps after the 2018 elections. Originally, the commission intended to release its recommendations in December. The commission was tasked with, among other things, exploring whether or not the state should revise the 15-year-old formula that it uses to distribute money to city schools and to schools around the state. The commission is also taking a look at a variety of new policies and how they might benefit Maryland students. Members of the commission say that there's simply not enough time between now and the 2018 legislative session to calculate the cost of their recommendations and come up with a plan to pay for them. So what might the decision to delay the commission's recommendations mean for Baltimore City Schools, which have dealt with their share of budgetary concerns in recent years? The last time we spoke with Dr. Santalises, she was facing the possibility of having to lay off 1,000 employees and cut programs. Many of those cuts were avoided when the school district received an additional $59 million in state and local funding, but 115 staff members were let go last spring. School has been underway for a couple of months now. Last year, suspensions were down by 20%, which administrators attribute to school disciplinary practices that focus on positive reinforcement. So what are the teachers doing differently, and what resources do they need to keep up the positive trend? You can join our conversation with Dr. Santalises at 410-662-8780. You can email us midday@wypr.org. You can find us on Twitter at Midday Tom Hall. And thanks to our good friend Jamila Krempel, we are streaming at Facebook this afternoon. So check out the WYPR Facebook page and you can see what's cooking out here in Studio A. Dr. Santalises, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So this is the first year that school started right after Labor Day. Yes. The governor decided that it should be so. You and the others were folks in your positions around the state weren't necessarily thrilled with that idea, but it's happened. We're 2 months in. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
So we are 2 months in. We're excited. I'm excited as I go out to schools and see our teachers, our principals, our young people really, I think, tackling this question of how do we make school more engaging for young people, but also how do we raise the standard and the performance and skills that young people have. And it's been heartening. I met with some principal supervisors the other day, and they concurred that by and large, while we have a ways to go, there really is an energy in the district around how we move to the next level for all of our young people. So it's been a great start.
Has the fact that it started a couple of weeks later than it has in the past several years mattered? Are you going to have to chop days of vacation off between now and June?
Well, and so far we don't know that. So, you know, we start when we start. I still have a preference for starting earlier. I just think a lot of our young people, an extended summer for them means more time away from learning, more time away from safe learning spaces. But we, like everyone else around the state, certainly adjusted. The weather will take a look at Farmer's Almanac and what the weather ends up being this year. So there's still a lot of time to see what next year's calendar will be. But no, so far we're off to a good start and we're on our way.
So last year, when you were thinking about the budget and stuff for this year, one of the big factors was declining enrollment in the school. So now we're 2 months in. I know it takes a while to actually figure out. It seems like a simple thing, just count the kids, right? But it's a little more complicated than that. Kids switch schools. They move from neighborhood to neighborhood and that kind of stuff. But what's your take on what the enrollment is right now? Is it in line with the projections that you were making, you know, a year ago when you were formulating the budget for this school year?
So right now, the preliminary indications are that we are down. We knew that, you know, with census data and birth rates, that things would be going down. And so we're seeing some of that. And then we're also hearing from school leaders a variety, you know, because we are a heavy choice district. We have some schools where enrollment is up, but we also know, for example, I talked to a principal a couple of weeks ago who had 30 families in her schools were offered vouchers to move outside of Baltimore City that has nothing to do with schooling. And she lost 30 families. And the family said, look, we love your school, but we have a chance to move. And so we're going to take that. So we know that there's some of that impacting. We also know that, you know, we still have families that are not, you know, that are moving out of the city. So we'll get the final numbers. It does look like it's lower, but we're also excited about the promise of a lot of our enrollment campaign, some of the early indicators that
over the summer, teachers are actually going door to door.
Yes,
you know, make sure you register your kids.
Absolutely. And I want to give our BTU partners credit for really helping to spearhead some of that effort.
That's Baltimore Teachers Union.
Sorry. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Baltimore Teachers Union. And we partnered with them. And it really was, I would say, seed sowing. We're not, you know, seeing huge bursts so far in pre-K, but I think what it did signal is we've got to be proactive. We're seeing schools that market well, that open up their doors, show families what's going on. They're seeing an uptick in enrollment, being able to really get out and talk about the kind of programming that families want to see. In those schools, in those communities, we're seeing an uptick. The question is really tied to the overall health of the city as well. So I think that's directionally what we're putting a lot of emphasis on. The board is definitely keeping their eye on how we are doing a better job at marketing and, frankly, keeping kids, too, you know, at our high school level.
I mean, can you slap a number on it? I mean, a few years ago, it was 86, 87,000. Then it was down to 85. Last year, they started talking about 84. I mean, is where are we in terms of that number?
Yeah, and that I feel a little, I mean, I do feel a little antsy saying because there's so much in flux, but we could be looking, you know, in the range of, say, a 500 to 750 student decline this year. And again, it could be more sometimes when, because of the way that the state counts young people, for example, like they have to be in school for 10 days straight within a certain period of time in the first, say, 6 weeks of school. So a young person could still be coming, but unless they're there for 10 days straight, we don't get to count them for the school. So we'll still need to, you know, see what comes out in the wash. But right now, I would say for this year, it's looking like enrollment will be down. But I'm a long ball player. And so we're really looking for where are the spots where we are seeing the increases and how do we build those up.
And of course, the mayor and others, you know, are trying to attract people to the city, but particularly families. So, you know, we just have to see how that plays out. But
absolutely,
this is a problem when it comes to the budget, right?
Yes,
because
it is.
Because the state is
absolutely
looking at the bodies and saying, you know, fewer bodies, fewer bucks.
That's right. No, the state is, and it's the right question. It also impacts how many schools we actually have and how many schools we keep.
Because we have a number of really pretty small schools. We're one of the few jurisdictions that has that.
That's right, Tom. And we talked about that last year during the budget crisis. And, you know, I had to tell a lot of community members and families, I'm not anti-small schools. I love small schools. But the real question is how small is too small? And I think to the credit, even of some of our, I would say, more larger perspective principals, we had a few who said, look, I know my building's small and I have another school a couple of blocks away that's really small. And I can see now, based on what we're going through, that that might not make the best sense. So this will also have impact on our portfolio options that we're going to be queuing up to our board in the next few months, actually. So, you know, the school closing piece and consolidation of schools is part of this issue.
So enrollment may be a little bit down. One of the other things that's down is the number of kids being suspended. It's down pretty significantly. It was about 8,500 kids a couple of years ago. Last year, 6,800. So that's a significant decline in the number of suspensions. So to what do you attribute that? I assume that's purposeful. And how's that working out?
So I will say this, you know, and again, I really work to be very transparent when I'm talking. So if you look at the figures this year, they actually match very closely the figures about 2 years ago, right? So one of the things that we do know that we feel really good about is long-term, the investments we're making in developing the capacity of teachers, principals, school-based folks to build the social-emotional health and well-being of young people. And we have more schools implementing restorative practices. We have more schools that
tell
are
me
really,
what restorative practices
see,
means.
You're so good.
But in the context of because that's a term we hear all the time. We hear this in the criminal justice system.
Yes.
So in a school, in a classroom, when that kid is kicked out of the classroom and goes to the principal's office, what restorative stuff actually happens?
So when you're talking restorative practices, so there's kind of restorative practices as a program, but when we're talking about it, we're talking about restorative practices, meaning we're not, what are we doing to help return the young person, right, to the kind of productive behavior we want to see? How are we giving them space for their voice, right, for their voice to be part of the process? How are we building community within schools that help to mitigate some of the early, you know, kind of conflicts and altercations that will sometimes lead to suspensionable, if there's such a word, behavior? And so when we look at our schools that are really successful in doing this, you see things like regular circles, right, community circles, where young people come together with faculty, and they're taught how to share, right? They're taught how to talk about challenges that they're having, and they're taught how to have space and behaviors and reactions that are far more productive, right, than acting out. And so what we're seeing is that a lot of the conflict resolution pieces, a lot of things we can get ahead of, but we also know that it's going to take a while to get there. And you know what we want this to be is something that is a long term. I will also say forthrightly that part of last year was just we had a new system for also inputting suspension. So I want to be transparent about
that.
So
maybe
too.
The data isn't quite apples and apples.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's in some ways like we're happy about the indication. But if you notice, I didn't go out with 50 banners, right, saying that we've dropped 20%, because some of it realistically is we shifted data input. And so while I do think we've had a decline because we put a stake in the ground, we said this is what we're going for, and we're coming out with plans to support people. But some of it, I'm sure, is also data transfer. And with the data, the new data system, we're still trying to make sure we know just how much of a decline, you know.
We have a caller with a question about this. Jonathan in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Dr. Sonia Sandalises.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment. I know a lot of Baltimore City school teachers and principals, and I don't quite trust the 20% decline. A lot of the professionals that I know, they are terrified to suspend students in fear that they will not get the budget or get the funding that they are used to getting. And so you have students who are really cursing out teachers, hitting teachers, and they go right back to the classroom the next day.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for the call, Jonathan. Does a suspended kid count towards lower enrollment?
No,
there's a whole bunch of reasons to suspend kids and to not suspend kids, but is that one of the factors?
Well, and I think that one of the pieces, you know, and look, I've been in schools, I was a school leader, you know, I taught, I get what some of the repercussions are, and I think the caller, Jonathan, is spot on that's something we're watching, right? But it's also why we didn't just go out and say, don't suspend kids, right? We went out and we said, we've got to shift school culture. And when I had numerous conversations with principals and teachers What I heard overwhelmingly was we need the tools and the skills to be able to handle real volatile situations, one, when they do occur in more productive manners, and two, to help kind of have a different set of tools to be able to respond, right, to when things happen and also preventing them from happening. And so when we look at schools that have really dug deeply with this, that's why suspensions are going down. It's the other reason why we're partnering with CASEL, and I can't give you the acronym, all of the words, even though I know Tom's going to hold me to them, but CASEL is partnering with us. They do work nationally with school districts. As a matter of fact, I just had 2 days of meetings with them yesterday. And we're really digging deeply on this building the social emotional health of young people. How do we make sure that kids have extracurriculars? A lot of times kids are going home and into communities facing things they shouldn't have to, that if they had like high quality after school, it's why the mayor has focused on that. So there's a lot that builds in, but I do think the caller's right. It's not just about push the numbers down. We've made a commitment to make sure we're changing school cultures and helping them to be healthy.
But of course, the theory of it is terrific, and restorative practice sounds good and everything, but boy, if you're a teacher and you've got classroom management issues because there's one or two kids who are just being disrupted, that is tough stuff.
No, it is. And folks on the front line, and that's why teachers are saying, thank you for the theory. We do believe that, but you've got to give me some help, and that's why we're committed to getting them the help.
We're going to take a little break. Dr. Sonia Santelises is the president and CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. We'll have more with Dr. Santelises when we return, plus some more of your calls and emails, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. To find us on Twitter, @MiddayTomHall. We're also streaming on Facebook Live at the WIPR Facebook page. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's Midday. By the way, coming up Monday on the program, it's Midday at the Movies with Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post and Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival. Going to talk about some of their favorite horror movies just in time for Halloween. Plus, we'll talk about the horror stories that continue to unfold in Hollywood and well beyond as more and more women come forward with sexual assault allegations against some of Hollywood's biggest names, as well as other celebrities in media and politics, as they are being thrown into the scrum. That's coming up Monday on Midday. And coming up a little later today, the internationally acclaimed classical guitar virtuoso Manuel Barrueco joins me. He's going to play a couple of tunes for us, so stick around for that. If you're just joining us today, my guest is Dr. Sonia Santelises. She's the CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. To join our conversation, our number is 410-662-8780. To send us an email, midday@wipr.org. And to find us on Twitter, @MiddayTomHall. We are also streaming live at the WYPR Facebook page. So Dr. Santelises, the mayor now has control over who gets appointed to the school board. Mm-hmm. The applications for people who wanted to serve were due at the end of last month, I believe. How do you think that's going to change the makeup of the school board, and what will the impact on your job be?
Well, I think, you know, really the any change that occurs is connected to the individuals that serve. And that's true whether you have an elected school board, whether you have an appointed school board, whether it's the mayor that appoints the school board. I think the mayor has shown that she is attuned to the fact that the vitality of schools in the city is intricately linked, very much like safety and economics, to the overall vitality of the school. I don't know yet who those new appointees will be. I will say that the current board, I couldn't have asked for a better board in terms of just support, critical thinking, willingness to dig in. The school commissioners during my 15 months in have been very supportive, and I think that the mayor is committed to that. But again, it's going to depend on who the quality of the actual individuals that are selected.
Because it used to be that the mayor and the governor jointly selected people. Mm-hmm. Now it's completely local control, at least when it comes to the school board itself. Let's talk about the budget.
Sure.
You know, you had such a difficult situation facing you last year. You talked about long-term structural deficits. Where do those structural deficits sit now? I mean, are you okay for this current school year as you project ahead to the 2018-19 school year? Where do you think things lie?
So, I mean, I think one of the comforting things is that because of the advocacy of the Baltimore City community, the legislature, and even the governor's support, we were able to have 3 years of funding support to stabilize our budget. Now, again, we've also got to counter what we talked about earlier, and that is precipitous declines in student enrollment. But it does give us time, for example, to look at things like the implementation of our teachers' contract. And we are working with BTU to jointly look at how do we bring the cost of healthcare down. In our most recent agreement with the Baltimore Teachers Union, we will see some savings with healthcare, but we need more. We're going to be going back to the table to look at progression of our salary scale, but also just implementation period. Like, what? How are we actually maximizing the contributions that teachers are making along that ascension up the salary scale to actual student achievement? So we're looking at those structural pieces. We're looking at our 21st century schools, our maintenance.
That's the building program.
Thank you. Yep, that's the new building program, but also maintenance. And we were recognized by the governor, by Treasurer Kopp, and Comptroller Francho just a few weeks ago, or actually last week, about our building maintenance. So Chief Scroggins, who's our chief operating officer, Dr. Lynette Washington, that team has done an amazing job in really doing a lot with our buildings with very, very little. And so those are the kinds of things long term that we're looking to do. And then structurally, we've got to get a handle, as we talked about earlier, on enrollment. We've got to get a handle on consolidating schools. So that has played into some of the recommendations we're going to be bringing to the board this year.
And those are the same things we were talking about a year ago.
Same thing.
Declining
things.
Enrollment, the
exactly.
difficulty with the salaries of the teachers, yeah. the health insurance, the
yes.
building stuff. A lot of this 21st mm-hmm. century school building funds has come out of the general operating funds of the school system.
That's exactly right.
You know, I mean, there is some money from the state, but a lot of money from the state, mm-hmm. but still. So it's interesting that the fundamental challenges haven't budged that much. You've got to make those moves.
No,
yeah.
no, we do, and I think that's also why two state appointed commissions have come out and said that Baltimore City is underfunded, right?
Yeah.
And I know people have questions about that, but the reality is, it's an ongoing issue that we're not just going to skirt.
And let's talk about one of those. This is the Commission on Innovation and Excellence in Education.
Yes.
Sounds so nice. Known as the Kerwin Commission,
yes.
chaired by Britt Kerwin, mm-hmm. former head of the Regents of the University of Maryland system. This notion of fair student funding.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that's been around since about 2008.
Yes.
People have pointed to the formula that people use in the state of Maryland to fund schools as being somewhat antiquated. It's now mm-hmm. 15 years old. Time for a fresh look. What is the current formula? What should the formula be? And do you have faith that the Kerwin Commission is going to be able to make a persuasive enough argument about it to affect change?
So first I would say, so fair student funding is how we in Baltimore City actually allocate our dollars that we receive as an entire district. So when we refer to fair student funding in city schools, what that simply means is that the money follows the student and there are certain weights. It is not necessarily the statewide formula. What we have been saying we think needs to change in the statewide formula is that there needs to be consideration for concentrated poverty, that we are advocating that the formula has to take into account real wealth, not wealth on paper. And we know that Baltimore City, you know, fortunately, we, you know, have been blessed to have a lot of development. But when that development is not directly tied to increased tax revenue, or that tax revenue is further in the future, what that means is we're looking wealthier on paper than we actually are. And so what we've been advocating for most vociferously is those two things within the funding formula has to change. I mean, what I do commend the Kerwin Commission for doing is not also just asking the question of what is adequate, but asking what does a 21st century state-of-the-art school system look like? And when we get into those questions, they're asking things like, what is the cost of having the investment in teacher development that some top performing countries in the world have? They're asking questions like, how should we invest in early childhood education and things like universal pre-K that are internationally and nationally recognized as being verifiable strategies to increase equity that benefit all communities, not just Baltimore City? So I think the real push has to be, are we willing as a state that has been very proud of the fact that we've been ranked nationally as a top state in education, are we willing to continue that investment? And we know that Baltimore City, and I'll just say it again, is short money that outside commissions, even prior to Kerwin, have determined is off anywhere from the tune of $200 to $300 million.
Yeah, and the Kerwin Commission hired a consultant, and when they looked at this so-called Thornton formula, the old formula, the formula may be changed, they determined that the state would need to spend $2.9 billion, with a B, dollars more just next year. That's statewide. But, you know, then it's a question of how much of a cut of that does the city itself get. And there's also some concern. There was a meeting of the Maryland Association of Boards of Education earlier this month, and there were some members of the Kerwin Commission who addressed that conference. And they said that actually the commission has not been spending that much time thinking about the funding formula. They have thought about pre-K. They've thought about changing the way that we actually devise the metrics for what poverty means. It's not necessarily just the kids who qualify for free lunch and breakfast.
Right.
They're talking about altering certifications. I mean, those kinds of things. But they're not spending that much time thinking about the formula. Isn't the formula like the thing? Isn't that the real deal here?
Well, I would say that the formula is where the rubber hits the road about everything else you say that's important. So we can address all of those other issues, and if we don't get down to the actual dollars that follow, and frankly, the agreements. And I have said continually, even when I was chief academic officer all the way to now being CEO, you know, we're not afraid of accountability, but you can't throw out random accountability targets and not provide the resources to get there. And so part of what I think the commission is wrestling with, and I think that's part of what's driving their announcement yesterday, is they do recognize that they have to be thoughtful about the cost and what it is going to cost. And so I think that's part of what's driving their request for more time.
Let's see if we can get a call
sure,
or two.
Please.
Laura in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Dr. Sonia Santelises.
Hi, thank you so much. I want to thank Dr. Santelises for her dedication to Baltimore City Public Schools. It's great to have someone who's been there for multiple years.
Oh, thanks, Laura.
But I do want to ask about budgeting for each individual school. Right now, principals have a lot of autonomy with their budget, and I was wondering if the district might take over some of that, because what I've seen is each school kind of spends things in a different way, so there's not a lot of norming across the district of what each school provides.
No, thank you for the question, Laura. And you have, I think, very appropriately put your finger on one. I would say a central tension that we are wrestling with right now.
Because back in the day, not too far ago, this school autonomy thing was a big deal.
Well, and I think it still is, right? So in one sense, when we have started some early analysis of fair student funding, one of the things we do know is that there is greater funding equity across the district now than there was prior to fair student funding. The challenge that Laura has rightly pointed out is we still have uneven distribution of the decisions people make around how that money gets spent. And I would say to Laura, that's where we're taking the deeper look. I don't think we're backing away from the fact that the people closest to the school should be making those decisions. But we are doubling down on the fact that parents and communities need to be heard in those decisions. And we are taking a greater responsibility centrally to say, where are some of those inequities? If one school is paying for their young people, you know, to have art classes every day, right, extra, and another school is saying we can only give it to you a certain amount of time, why is that? Is it the size of the school? Is it the decision of the administration? We have some schools, principals that forego having an assistant principal because they want to put that money into programming for schools. We have other principals who say, my school is such, I need an assistant principal if I'm going to move instruction, and they may make different decisions. But Laura's absolutely right. We're taking a look at that now, because we're committed to equity, and we realize that some of those decisions are yielding an unequal set of enrichment and access for kids. But I don't think we're backing off on folks closest to the school know best how to use that money.
Have a comment about what people often refer to as the achievement gap between kids of color and Caucasian kids. There's a lot of research now saying that it's not integration that's the problem with schools, and our schools nationwide are perhaps even more segregated than they were in 1965. I mean, it's a, you know, despite the busing attempts and whatnot in the 70s and a lot of other, you know, ways of concentrating on mixing kids of different races in schools, they're saying that it's black teachers that matter, not integration. So Pierre gets in touch with us through Facebook. Do you think hiring more teachers of color would help with the change of culture you referred to in the first segment?
And it's a great question. And is it Pierre, did you say it
Pierre.
Was? And I think one of the great things about Pierre's question is that this is a national question. What I will say that we are seeing is that, one, we want to make sure that we have teachers. We have we want to make sure we have excellent teachers, period. So that's my first statement. We need excellent teachers, regardless of race, regardless of ethnicity. At the same time, we absolutely need to attend to making sure that a significant number of those teachers reflect the young people they're teaching. All of that, I would say that fundamentally, I have found excellent teachers of every race, and I have found, frankly, some teachers who struggle of every race and ethnicity, and I have seen some folks who should not be in classrooms of every race and ethnicity. So I do think we need to attend to it. It's something that we are paying attention to in Baltimore City. We're reviewing those numbers. We're watching the demographic shift, but we're also watching the practice, what's actually happening in classrooms with young people. And I think...
And isn't there real data saying that if you're a third grade African-American boy and your teacher is an African-American male, that there is a, just sort of an instant connect there that may not happen if your teacher is a white woman or your teacher is somebody else? I mean, that instant connect that is at least plausible, you know, is something that's going to give that teacher in that classroom a big leg up. I mean, there's a lot of folks on the ground who say it just sort of makes sense. You know, if you see somebody at the front of the class who looks like you, that's just going to make sense.
Well, I think you need to see some people in the front of the class that look like you. And what we also know is that while you might have that initial leg up, and I can use myself back when I was teaching in Brooklyn, it initially gave me a leg up. But an hour later, if my lesson is going off track, whatever leg up I had has now been lost, right? And I have had, and actually I went to Baltimore Teachers Network, had an award ceremony last night. And what was wonderful is you had African-American teachers who were being honored, but you also had Caucasian teachers, right, who were being honored, whose students felt just as passionately about them. So it is absolutely something that matters. It is absolutely something that we're tracking. But I would also say I have been in this business long enough. I've been in the business of schooling long enough. And I've got to tell you, I've seen great teaching coming from a lot of places, and I've seen some really poor teaching coming from a lot of people. And so we've got to attend to it because it matters that young people see leadership that looks like them. But we cannot sacrifice an attention on building quality classrooms everywhere just so that visually we think that it looks more like what we want it to.
You are a acclaimed professional in the education business. I was interested to read a piece in the Afro in which Davon Love was quoted. He's a guy who's one of the leadership people in Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. He's an activist in town. And he says that there's been a professionalization of the education sector to the detriment of listening to folks in the community and maybe trying some non-traditional approaches. With the 21st century schools, part of the deal with these schools, these new buildings, and they're popping up all over, is that they want to become sort of fundaments of the community. So mom and dad and aunt and uncle and the guardians are going to be going there along with the kids. I mean, are there efforts to say, let's take a really fresh look that maybe isn't in the purview of, you know, PhDs in education?
No.
And not to say anything bad about please. You and all the other PhDs
in education.
No.
Well, and I've been in the halls when I was going to those classes that led to that degree, and I will tell you, I agree with Devon on that. Like it, and one of the reasons why we have had a push, and I actually had a meeting this morning with our head of family and community engagement, is there is a real focus on how do we connect as a system, as a collection of schools, to those folks on the ground who have been doing this work on behalf of young people, and in some cases are actually more successful than we are in connecting with them, right? Because they've been there a long time. It doesn't matter who the CEO is, they don't go away. And we are absolutely making a deliberate attempt to really rethink and restructure how we use the strengths that those members of the community bring. So I'm not in disagreement. I just think we need assistance in thinking through what's the best way for that to happen.
Let's see if we can get another call or two. Bill in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Dr. Santelises.
Hey, thank you. Let me congratulate the CEO and applaud her for taking on a monumental task.
Thank you, Bill.
However, I have to say, quite frankly, I don't feel confident in listening to her answers up to now. Baltimore has some unbelievable issues to overcome. I've seen maybe about 7 or 8 CEOs go through with all the different plans and ideas, and I've seen money thrown all over the place.
Yeah, but, and in your reckoning, Bill, what are the most important things? What's the one thing that Dr. Santelises should be paying attention to in your view?
Well, you got to come back to the first caller, which basically highlighted the relationship between the administration, the teachers, and the students. You cannot have certain policies in place that basically criminalizes, for lack of a better word, the teacher for, let's say, trying to discipline a student, sending them out of class, and having the administrator bring them right back. Or let's take another example, a personal anecdote. My first week coming back into city schools, I had 5 fights in 1 week.
Were you a teacher?
And I broke up. Yeah,
were you a teacher?
I broke up all of those fights. And the administration blamed me. They wrote me up, actually.
Okay, Bill, I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off, but we are almost out of time, so I want to give Dr. Santelises a chance to respond. I mean, this is what we were talking about before.
The theory
is one thing, and in the practice is another.
Sure, and what I would say is, of course, we have a long way to go in the practice, but I will also say that I have seen teachers with the same young people who break out into fights in one person's classroom go down the hall, and that there's not that fight. So to say that there is a criminalization of teachers for reporting, if a young person, there is nothing on the books in Baltimore City's discipline policy says that a young person slugs a teacher and goes back into a classroom. There is nothing on the books that says a young person carries a weapon and goes back into a classroom. If the young person is just being sent and there's no intervention, then that's the inappropriate, right, implementation of that strategy. And then we need to provide the support. But I have been in enough classrooms and seen, quote, problem students that with one individual happen to be just fine. And I've talked to real teachers who on the side will tell me, I know that teacher said such and such, but when they're with me,
right,
they're just fine. So let's all be honest. And I think we're all honest, we know that there's
we're going to do a whole thing about that, about this classroom
management
business.
Because
we had a lot of calls and emails about that we couldn't get to, but this is clearly something that's on a lot of folks' minds. All right. Good to see you. Thank you so much for coming by.
Great to see you,
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Dr. Sonia Santelises, she's the CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. The district is hosting a series of public meetings to talk about updating the Fair Student Funding Model, which is how we allocate money for the schools. The next ones are November 15th and 16th. They're at Frederick Douglass and at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute, respectively. A couple more in December. We've got information at wypr.org/midday. Coming up after a break, renowned classical guitarist Manuel Barrueco joins me in the studio. He's got a preview of a performance that he's giving tomorrow night in Towson. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.